Today at Reader's Corner, Adam Makos, author of A Higher Call, an incredible true story of combat and chivalry in the war-torn skies of World War II.
Four shells exploded around Charlie's bomber, enough to badly damage it. So Charlie and his buddies were left behind on their first mission. They trusted this bomber to get them home. It would take them 8 hours over to Germany, and hopefully it would take them back to their base in England. Franz knew that if another German fighter came along, they wouldn't shoot if they saw him there on the wing. And they told their story about how two enemies could become friends, and I think it's going to change the way people look at World War II.
I'm Bob Custra, president of Boise State University. Welcome to Reader's Corner. On December 20th, 1943, a crippled B-17 bomber desperately headed for the safety of the German coast and the North Sea. Piloted by a 21-year-old American airman on his first combat mission, it had been strafed by enemy fire after dropping a bomb load on the German town of Bremen. With half its crew dead or injured, its tail nearly blown away, and gaping holes in its fuselage, the besieged bomber struggled to stay aloft. Suddenly, a German Messerschmitt jet piloted by an ace fighter appeared off the American plane's wing. The defenseless rookies on that plane could only stare in horror, certain they were just moments from death. But instead of delivering a fatal blow, the German pilot risked court-martial and a firing squad by providing the enemy a safe escort over the German flak line and out to sea. That single act of valor would forever change the lives of all those involved. Today's guest, Adam Makos, recounts this story and its aftermath in his book, A Higher Call, an incredible true story of combat and chivalry in the war-torn skies of World War II. The book, written with co-author Larry Alexander, is now out in paperback. In honor of Veterans Day, we're featuring an encore edition of our interview with Adam Makos. He is a journalist, historian, and editor of the military magazine Valor. In this capacity, he has interviewed countless veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and present-day wars. Mr. Makos joined us by phone for this interview. Adam Makos, welcome to Reader's Corner.
Thank you, Bob. It's an honor to be on your show.
Adam, the two obvious characters that your book spends so much time talking about, Franz Stigler and Charlie Brown, no doubt who they are, and we're going to talk about them in a moment. But in a sense, there's a third hero of your story, and it's just embedded in the story, and that's the B-17 bomber. Could you describe for us the size of the crew, what the crew's doing on that bomber? And of course, it's not just about the guy who's dropping the bombs. It's about the guys who are playing defense, the gunners as well.
You're exactly right. Charlie Brown, our hero pilot, had a co-pilot, but he also had another 8 men on his crew for a total of 10 men, and they served as gunners. The aircraft you're referring to is the B-17 called Ye Old Pub, and it was a plane that Charlie and his crew had adopted. When they got to England, they were rookies. This big incident happened on their first mission, so they were borrowing this plane. It was essentially handed to them, and it had patches on it and it had scars from other battles. And the young gunners and pilots, they called their B-17s girls, so this was their girl. So they always referred to Ye Old Pub as her or she, and they trusted this bomber to get them home. It would take them up to 35,000 feet. It would take them 8 hours over to Germany, and hopefully it would take them back to their base in England.
And these gunners were pretty much exposed in the sense that there was this plexiglass front to the bomber where a couple of these guys sat, and then there was the tail gunner, and of course most of these Messerschmitts that were coming after these guys were attacking from the rear. That was probably the first guy to get hit.
It was. The rear was a very vulnerable position for a B-17. And these gunners, it's quite incredible when you really look at what they did. These are 21-year-old men, 19, 18, some even younger. And they're standing there 20, 30,000 feet above the earth, separated from the elements by a thin sliver of aluminum. I mean, sometimes the skin on a B-17 was almost as thin as a slice of paper. So these guys are up in the cold. It would drop down to sub-zero temperatures. And they're fighting these German fighters that are coming head-on, that are coming vertically from the heavens. It was just a real nightmare, and I think it's an overlooked part of World War II. We know about the men who stormed the beaches of Omaha Beach in France. We've learned about Peleliu and the island campaigns. But the B-17 bomber boys, it's really an overlooked chapter in our country's history.
This bombing run was Charlie's first time as a pilot on a combat mission. So what was the mission for that day?
The mission was to bomb a German factory that produced Focke-Wulf aircraft, essentially the fighters that attacked Ye Olde Pub. They were trying to knock them out before they rolled off the assembly line. And so they took off that morning very early, almost pre-dawn, from their base at Kimbolton, England. They crossed the North Sea, the frozen North Sea between Germany and England. And as they lined up on the bomb run, Charlie's plane was at the bottom of the formation. Because Charlie Brown was a new pilot, because his crew were all rookies, they got the worst spot in the formation. And it was called Purple Heart Corner. They were essentially the tail end Charlie. They were at the bottom and back of the formation. And it was the most vulnerable spot because everyone knew that if German fighters attacked, they would go for the most exposed person on the far end of the formation.
So what went wrong?
Well, what went wrong over the target was just a stroke of very bad luck for this new crew. The Bremen aircraft factories and region, that was well defended by upwards of 350 German flak guns. So these cannons are ringing out from the ground. They have some of the best gunners in all of Germany because these factories were so important to the German Navy and the German Air Force. Well, Ye Olde Pub got unlucky that day, and a four-gun bracket, these guns would shoot in batches of four, basically, four shells exploded around Charlie's bomber. Not a direct hit, but enough to badly damage it. So an engine was knocked out, the nose was blown off, a hole was punched right through the right wing, and this plane automatically became a crippled straggler. And a straggler essentially was a plane that fell from formation. The formation had to keep going. The other 200 planes in that group couldn't just wait around for one because the fighters would come. So Charlie and his buddies were left behind on their first mission.
And for a first-time pilot in combat, Charlie chooses a pretty unorthodox approach to dealing with these Messerschmitts.
Yes, what happened? So like blood in the water, the sharks gathered around the pub, and the sharks that day were German Focke-Wulf 190 fighters. And they found this B-17 just kind of limping over Germany, and they swarmed it. So at one time, Charlie was under attack by 12 fighters. Now, no B-17 before that had been attacked by 12 fighters had ever survived. You could barely survive if you were attacked by one or two. What Charlie did, though, was he had been a boxer as a boy, and he had learned a lesson that when you stand still, you get punched. And so that day, Charlie decided he was going to fly his aircraft like a fighter. So he took this damaged, wounded B-17, and he turned it up on a wing, and he was orbiting in the heavens with these German fighters. So as they come in to shoot at him, he would bank up on a wing and turn against them. He was giving them a fleeting target, the smallest target he could, and he kept moving. And he kept his crew alive for a good 8 to 10 minutes before he entered a turn, and all of a sudden he lost control of the plane, and it spun out of the air toward the earth. And that's what saved them from the 12 German fighters that day.
And he did obviously pull his way out of that one?
Yes, he did. It was a harrowing maneuver. He woke up at the last minute. He lost the oxygen. His oxygen tanks were shot out. He was unconscious as they flipped upside down and essentially spun toward the earth like a leaf. And then 5,000 feet, 7,000 feet, he doesn't even know. The lights came back on, and the aircraft righted itself. And Charlie's job was really to pull it out of this death dive that it had entered. And he woke up, and his co-pilot woke up when they were flying just above a German city, just above the treetops. He pulled out. It sounds like something out of Hollywood, but it really happened. And so then Charlie and his crew were skimming the German countryside, and all they knew, they didn't even know where they were at first. They just said, we need to go north, because north would lead them out of Germany, and it would lead them over the North Sea, and from there they could chart a course back to England.
And what did this plane look like at this point?
they said that not a square foot of the aircraft was without a hole. So this thing had bullet holes from nose to tail. It had flak holes. And the B-17E old pub was an olive green bomber, so the paint was flaking away everywhere. So there were little silver patches across this plane. Again, one engine was shot out. Another one failed on them. So they're down to basically two good engines. The nose is blown off. The tail gunner had been killed in the aerial battle above. And so his blood at that time was pouring down the barrels of his guns. And the other gunners at that during that air battle that we had talked about, his other gunners were knocked out. Of the bombers, upwards of 10 guns, there were basically two still functioning. Mm-hmm. So this plane was limping home, badly damaged, and worse, it was defenseless.
And at one point, the crew really had to discuss, Charlie had to discuss with the crew, just what to do here. Are we going to bail out, or are we going to take this plane back? What were their options?
That was exactly what happened. Charlie knew he had a man in the back, one of his waist gunners, a guy named Yelsenko, had lost his leg. His leg had essentially been blown off at the knee by one of the fighter shells. And this man was luckily not bleeding to death because the cold air had frozen the wound. And Charlie said, you know, guys, we're barely going to get out of Germany. We will barely make this three-hour flight across the ocean. Who wants to jump now in Germany? What we can do is put a parachute on Yelsenko. The German medics will care for him. They'll care for our wounded. You'll all end up in a POW camp, and that's far better than a crash at sea where we're all going to drown like the Titanic. And the men voted, and they came back, and they said, you know, sir, if you're going to stay with this plane and keep flying it, we're going to stay with you. And that was the decision they made. These nine remaining young men decided to stick together.
You're listening to Adam Makos. He's the author of A Higher Call, an incredible true story of combat and chivalry in the war-torn skies of World War II. So how does Franz Stigler enter this story?
Well, they were, again, kind of wandering north, not quite sure where they were going, trying to pinpoint their spot on the map. When they flew, they made one mistake. This was the one mistake Charlie made that day. He failed to see ahead and to the right, out the co-pilot side of the aircraft, the small concrete X on the ground that marked a German airfield. And there at a Jaeger field, Franz Stigler was standing beside his Messerschmitt 109 aircraft. He was smoking a cigarette. The ground crewmen were rearming it. They were refueling it. And they had just finished. So they were closing up the engine cowling. They were taking the fuel line off. This plane was ready to fight again because Franz Stigler had flown in combat that same morning. He had attacked the same bomber stream that Charlie had been flying in. Now, he didn't attack Charlie. He attacked a different spot in the formation. He attacked B-24 bombers that day. So Franz was rearming, refueling, and getting ready to go back up and hunt for any stragglers over the continent. And sure enough, a straggler, Charlie Brown's bomber, flies right over Franz Stigler's airfield.
So describe what happens when Stigler pulls up alongside this bomber. He's in the air now, and he's up to the bomber. What happens next?
Well, you're right. Franz jumps in his plane. He gives chase. He streaks over the trees, and he catches up to this American bomber. It's limping around about 2,000 feet by now. And he comes up behind it, and he has his finger on the trigger. And Franz fights by this code that, it's kind of almost like a gunslinger's code, almost a knightly code. And he says, when you shoot, I'll shoot. And may the best man win. Well, he's coming up on the tail of E Old Pub, and the guns aren't firing at him. And he gets curious, and he keeps coming up, and he comes closer and closer. And finally, this bomber comes into view, and he sees that the tail has been completely shredded. The rudder has almost fallen off. And he sees the guns are hanging low. That's why the tail gunner's not shooting at him. The man is likely dead. And he comes closer and closer. And finally, he sees the holes that are just filling this aircraft, riddling it. And he sees the blood of the tail gunner dripping down the barrels. That's how close he got. We're talking 75 feet or so. And Franz takes his finger off the trigger because he realizes this is a defenseless aircraft. And he realizes it further when he pulls up alongside the right wing, because now all of a sudden Franz is curious. He's never seen anything like this. He's never seen a plane this badly damaged, still flying. And he forgets for a moment that he's a German fighter pilot. He forgets that this bomber had bombed his homeland. He forgets that he has a job to do. And he just marvels at this aircraft like any of us would. And he pulls up alongside and he sees the waist gunners are wounded through these big open windows in the side of the plane. He sees them caring for one another, trying to stabilize their wounds. And he realizes this plane is a sitting duck. It's just like a man in a parachute.
And of course, when it comes to Franz, he's much more the fighter ace than Charlie Brown is, obviously, who's on his first mission. And he's one kill away from the Knight's Cross, is he not?
Yes, that's correct. Franz has been flying since 1942. So he had flown in Africa before this. He had flown in Sicily. He had flown in Italy. He had flown over Germany. He's a veteran. He's shot down 26 aircraft and one more based on this point scale. Bombers counted for more points than fighters did. And at the time, to earn Germany's highest award, you wanted 30 points. And those 30 points would qualify you for the Knight's Cross. It was a black cross you would wear around your neck, and it would tell everybody, you know, you were a big hero. And it actually, the Knight's Cross was a knightly sort of inspiration as a medal. It went back to the Teutonic Knights that had fought the Crusades. And so this was an ancient symbol in German culture. And Franz knew if he shot down this bomber, he would become a hero. He would get fan mail. He might get leave. He might get vacation to see his girlfriend. It could be a great thing for his family. Yet, when he saw those 9 defenseless Americans over German soil, he knew he couldn't shoot this bomber down. A lesson came back, one lesson he had learned in the desert from one of his squadron leaders. His squadron leader said, "Franz, what will you do if you find a man floating in his parachute after you've shot him down?" And Franz said, I don't know. I'll worry about it when it happens. And the squadron leader said, "If I ever see or hear of you shooting a man in a parachute, I'll shoot you down myself." And that lesson stayed with Franz because the lesson had a deep meaning. And it was, you follow the rules of war not for your enemy. You follow them to keep your soul, to keep your humanity. And Franz knew if he destroyed the bomber that day, not only would he be killing men, he would be dooming his own soul.
Well, I think another one of those rules of engagement was the one you talked about in the book, where if German pilots downed U.S. airmen, they'd seek them out first before the local Germans on the ground could get them.
That's exactly right. And a lot of American readers are very surprised to hear that. They say, wait a second, aren't these guys supposed to be these, you know, evil Nazis who just want to wipe out America and conquer the world and stomp all over it? And they forget that in World War I, the British and Germans and French flew by these rules of chivalry because being a pilot was very much a gentlemanly thing. Originally, only aristocrats were pilots, the Red Baron, for example. And these men knew these codes, which said you show respect for a wounded enemy. Your enemy is not someone you strive to kill, you strive to defeat them. You just strive to shoot down their aircraft. But they didn't celebrate the death that their job entailed. And so in World War II, the fighter pilots very much fought by the same kind of rules. They respected their counterparts who were flying in these machines in the same conditions, in the same dangers. And it wasn't personal like fighting on the ground was. So yes, when an American bomber crew would be shot down, many times a German fighter pilot who shot them down would later on get in a car and he would race to the spot to see what became of his prisoners. They were his in his mind. And a lot of times in Germany, due to the bombing campaign, civilians would be very eager to kill American or British crews. They would essentially lynch them. So the German pilots, sometimes the German mechanics, would in many cases go try to save an American or a British airman to get them into a German POW camp so the guy would live as opposed to be strung up in a tree and executed.
Today we're talking about A Higher Call, an incredible true story of combat and chivalry in the war-torn skies of World War II. Our guest, the author, is Adam Makos. So back to this rather unusual encounter, it wasn't just that Stigler let these guys go, but they actually communicated, or he attempted to communicate with them as they headed out over the North Sea? How'd that work?
Well, for one, Charlie Brown, he was alone in the cockpit. Charlie was at the controls trying to keep this plane flying. His co-pilot had gone back to check on the wounded. And Charlie looked out the right window to check on one of the right engines that was acting up. And there off his right wingtip, he saw this gray German BF-109 fighter. And there was Franz Ziegler on his wing. And Charlie closed his eyes and he shook his head and he thought he was living a nightmare. In reality, the nightmare on his wing would turn out to be his guardian angel. Well, then Charlie saw something else incredible. Their eyes met, and the German nodded at him. So Charlie now cannot believe what he's seeing. And the communication was very simple. At first, Franz just nodded and smiled. And after that, he pointed to the ground, and Charlie didn't understand. And what Franz was trying to say was, land in Germany. We need to get this plane out of the air. You've got to land. You've got wounded men aboard. And Charlie shook his head, and he pointed straight ahead. He's going to England. Well, at that point, Franz thought to himself, gosh, you stupid guy, you're never going to make it home. But Franz stayed with him. He pulled out on the wing a little bit further, and he stayed with him so that Charlie would be protected, because Franz knew that if another German fighter came along, they wouldn't shoot if they saw him there on the wing. Same with the German guns on the ground. Charlie was flying over heavily, heavily defended coastline. And as they passed the coast together, not a single gun on the ground fired at this American B-17. It was a sitting duck. It was at 2,000 feet. It was an easy shot. But the gunners that day saw this German fighter flying alongside the B-17, and they said, we don't know what's happening up there, but we certainly can't shoot on one of our own. And then Charlie and Franz flew together out over the North Sea for several more minutes. Franz did something very interesting that day, and that is he pointed to the right, and he was mouthing something, and Charlie didn't understand what it was. Franz was telling him, go to Sweden. Sweden is an hour flight to the east, whereas England is a good 3 hours to the west over the sea. You stand a better chance going to Sweden to sit out the war. And Charlie just shook his head, and he pointed toward England, because Charlie didn't understand. He just thought, I don't know what this German's trying to do, but we got to get rid of him. And so Franz basically said at that point, I've done all I can. He said, good luck. You're in God's hands. He saluted Charlie Brown, and he flew away. And that was the end of this brief little 10-minute encounter, which might be one of the most incredible moments of World War II.
So Franz Stigler's actions here aren't exactly the ticket to advancement in the German Air Force. Does anybody find out about this? And if they would have, what would have happened?
Franz kept it entirely secret. He knew if he had said a word to any of his buddies, to a mechanic, to anyone, he could have been shot. That very summer of 1943, a woman had been executed in Germany for telling the wrong joke in a factory. She said a joke about how Hitler wanted to put a smile on the faces of the people of Berlin. So what did he do? He climbed to a radio tower and jumped. And that was her joke. It was just a simple joke told on a work break. They cut off her head for it. So in those days in Nazi Germany, you could be killed for the wrong joke. What would happen for what Franz had done, letting a bomber escape? It was treason. So he kept it secret for the rest of his life. He told his wife, Haya, he told her finally when he was in his 70s or 80s. But otherwise, he was pretty tight-lipped about it.
Unfortunately, because we only have a half an hour, I'm going to have to skip over so much material. You've done a great job of giving us the background on Franz Stigler, the fact that he and his family were not Nazis, opened my eyes to the German Air Force in a way that I never really quite understood, but I have to get to the reunion. Years go by, and help us understand how Charlie Brown and Franz Stigler are reunited.
Well, this was one of the tearjerker moments in A Higher Call, and it's really the redemptive moment. Franz wondered his whole life what happened to that American bomber. Franz moves to Canada, works in the lumber industry up in Vancouver, and Charlie Brown settles in Miami, retires from the Air Force as a lieutenant colonel. And Charlie's at the same time wondered, what happened to that German who saved my life? What was his name? Who was he? And Charlie decided to put an ad in a fighter pilot magazine for German fighter pilots. And it said, looking for the man who saved my life, December 20th, 1943, over Bremen, Germany. If you know the details, contact me. Well, flash forward a couple weeks later, Franz Stigler opens his mail. he opens his fighter pilot newsletter, and there is the looking for ad. And he picks up his typewriter, and he writes Charlie a letter, and he says, "I'm Fromm Stiegler, and I know, and it's so good to know you survived, Charlie. I've wondered all these years." And that was it. Fromm didn't say, "Let's write a book together, let's make a movie, let's tour the world." He just said, "I'm glad it was worth it." Charlie gets the letter, and he calls up Fromm right away. He gets the operator in Vancouver, and she connects him. And Charlie says, "All right, Fromm, if this really happened, if you were really the one, where did you say goodbye to us?" And Fromm said, "Over the ocean." And Charlie said, "My God, it's you." And they said, "What were you pointing to, Fromm? What were you pointing when you were pointing east?" And Fromm said, "I was trying to get you to go to Sweden." And Charlie said, "My God, if I knew that, I'd be speaking Swedish today." And that was their reunion. That was their first reunion by phone. They agreed to meet later that year in Seattle, Washington. 1990, June 6th, they reunited, and they became best friends from that moment on. And for the next, a decade or more, they would do speeches together. They would do Rotary Clubs and Kiwanis and Boy Scouts, and they would go to military bases, and they told their story about how two enemies could become friends. And it's really a message that's just now taking hold. The story has just now come to light, and I think it's going to change the way people look at World War II. When you're rooting for a character on both sides, when you're rooting for Charlie to live and you're rooting for Fromm to live, you realize the full tragedy of World War II.
Now, when Charlie got back to base in England and told his story, the Air Force didn't have what we might think today would be the typical reaction.
They didn't. Just as Fromm couldn't tell his story, Charlie was told, "Put a lid on it, Charlie." This story went up to the top brass and it came back down, and they said, "Charlie, if you talk about this, you will be court-martialed." And Charlie couldn't believe it. He thought his crew had just survived this incredible air battle. They had made it across the ocean. And then he mentioned that some German had helped them escape Germany. And the brass said to Charlie, they said, "We can't have this story circulating. We can't have other bomber crews thinking that, oh, this German flying up next to us is going to fly with us and escort us." No, they don't want them holding their fingers off the trigger for even a split second. That story could cost American lives. And so Charlie's story was squashed. No medals awarded, no recognition. And finally, Bob, there was a wonderful redemptive moment in 2008 at the end of his life, just 6 months before Charlie died. The Air Force looked back into his story. They opened all the records, and they awarded him the Air Force Cross. They awarded each of his crewmen a Silver Star, and they said that we were wrong in 1943. And that's how Charlie Brown and the crew of Ye Olde Pub became one of the highest awarded bomber crews in American history. So now they are historical figures on the record.
Both of these men are men of incredible humility, and it reminds me of a quote that you give in the book at one point. I think it's when you first ran across Charlie Brown, and he said, "In this story, I'm just a character. Fromm Stiegler is the real hero." Well, let's face it, they were both heroes.
Exactly, and Charlie Brown gave us all a gift. He said, "Learn about this Stiegler guy. It's going to change your opinion. It's going to change the way you see war." And he was right. And I thank Charlie for steering me on the path of this story. And, of course, the credit goes to Fromm, but these two men really became brothers. And it's a great example we can all learn from. It's unlike any World War II story you've ever read before.
Well, I can't tell you how much I enjoyed it. And there's so much about the book we just didn't have a chance to cover. Again, thank you so much, Adam Makos, for joining us today at Reader's Corner. The name of the book, A Higher Call, An Incredible True Story of Combat and Chivalry in the War-Torn Skies of World War II. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you, Bob.
I hope you enjoyed this encore edition of our interview with Adam Makos. Next week, Matt Richtel, author of A Deadly Wandering, A Tale of Tragedy and Redemption in the Age of Attention. The engineer for today's show is Eric Jones, research by Kathleen Tuck. Our producer is Janelle Brown. I'm Bob Kustra. Please join me next week as we talk to today's leading writers about the ideas and issues that help shape our world at Reader's Corner.